Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There they were, at last, side by side, face by face on the split screen, going at it for 98 minutes, with Lester Holt in the moderator's chair, Donald Trump with a lot of off-the-cuff extemporizing, Hillary Clinton tightly prepped, punching, provoking. Who won? You tell us. This hour On Point, we're breaking down the first presidential debate. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What did you see up there last night? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got three great political journalists to take it all in with us. Joining me from New York is Molly Ball, political writer for The Atlantic. Molly, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. Also from New York, Glenn Thrush is with us, chief political correspondent at Politico. Glenn, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be here.
And with us from Washington is Sam Sanders, NPR reporter covering the 2016 presidential race, co-host of the popular NPR Politics podcast. Sam Sanders, welcome back. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Everybody's a little bit tired maybe today, but everybody was up last night and watching. Here was the gist. I don't know, a couple of the better lines, or at least things that go to the heart of what these two had to say. Hillary Clinton wanted you to know that you're going to have to judge, and she wanted you to think about it. Here she was at Hofstra University.
You have to judge us. Who can shoulder the immense, awesome responsibilities of the presidency? Who can put into action the plans that will make your life better?
Who can shoulder this? And Donald Trump, looking at her 30 years of experience, he talked about those a lot, but he didn't think they were a credit to her. Here was one of those punches from Trump.
Hillary has experience, but it's bad experience. We have made so many bad deals.
Okay, here we are. It's the morning after. I want to ask each of you, before we get into the details, I mean, how do you judge? How do you judge who did how well? Molly Ball, do you think in terms of a winner and a loser? How do you judge the outcome of a debate like this?
I generally try not to say somebody won, somebody lost. Okay. I think that's a little bit too reductive. Mm-hmm. But I do think that in terms of broad takeaways, in terms of think about the questions voters have been asking about these two candidates. They've obviously had questions about Donald Trump's temperament, about his lack of experience, about whether he can keep his cool. And I think he provided some ammunition to those concerns last night, although he did land a couple of good points early on in the debate. And I think for Hillary Clinton wanting to reassure voters that she might be an acceptable choice if they're seeking an alternative to Donald Trump, I think she made a pretty strong case.
So making the case is as far as you're going to go there, they both had some points. Glenn Thrush, how do you weigh a debate the morning after?
I have to differ with my friend Molly here, who has a lot more class and substance than I do.
Okay,
this is
Glenn.
A win and loss thing.
Okay, you
she
go.
Won. And he lost. And I'll tell you how I know. This is not a subjective judgment. I've been going to these things a lot. When you stand in the spin room after the debate, the guys that win are the ones who run out there with smiles on their faces and disgorge their talking points 30 seconds after the debate ends.
Mm-hmm,
the guys who lose are the ones who drift in like sullen seventh graders on the day before summer vacation where they're forced to take a test. I was walking behind one of Trump's surrogates as he was walking, slumping into the spin room last night at Hofstra. And he took a deep breath and he said, an expletive, let's get this out of the way.
That bad? That bad? Really? Hold that thought. I want to know why. Sam Sanders, how do you look at this? How do you come away with an assessment of who did how well?
Yeah. I mean, so I think my question is, how does this debate affect the voters that are still making their mind up?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very small fraction of the country. But it's not about what diehard Trump supporters think or what diehard Clinton supporters think, because they're going to support their candidates. I think it's the people that are still deciding. And I think for a lot of those folks still deciding, they're saying that if Trump can't keep his cool for 90 minutes, how can he do so for 4 years? I think he didn't do what he had to do last night, which was to show that he had the right temperament. And Clinton, though she wasn't perfect last night, she showed that she at least can keep her cool.
So maybe the swing. How big is that swing vote? We had somebody yesterday say 20% of the electorate undecided. Really that big? I
can't believe it's that high. I can't believe it's that high.
You buy it, Molly?
No, I buy it.
20%?
I do buy it. Yes, because I think there are so many voters who are unsure about both of these candidates. I've sat in on focus groups where there's a group of undecided voters who are actually paying very close attention. Normally, the undecided voters are the people who haven't really been paying attention to the election and are sort of loosely connected to the political process. There are a lot of partisans in this election who have doubts about their own party's candidate. I would say that's disproportionately on the Republican side, Republicans and conservative-leaning independents who have doubts about Trump. They would like to vote Republican, but they can't bring themselves to do so quite yet. So I think Trump's challenge last night was to convince those people that he is acceptable. And I don't think he met that bar. I think Sam's exactly right about that. I think he underscored rather than dispelling a lot of the questions that people have about him and his inability to focus on issues. And instead, you know, he kept getting defensive and distracted and down these incoherent rabbit holes of talking about himself.
Glenn, she went right at him. I mean, she came out obviously seeking to provoke Donald Trump up there last night on any number of fronts. They were tough, pointed, sharp attacks by Secretary Clinton and Early.
Yeah, that was the strategy going in. As was reported earlier in the week, my dear friend Philippe Reines, who was a longtime advisor for her and really one of the more bellicose members of her 2008 menagerie, played Donald Trump in the debate prep, and it was very clear that they felt that they couldn't afford to sit back on their haunches and wait for him to attack and counterattack. And I think that really is just standard bully fighting procedure, right? You punch him right in the face and see how he reacts. And I think Donald Trump, incidentally, we should say, has never been in a one-on-one debate.
Yeah.
That is an important factor here. The dynamic is totally different. And he has never been in a general election debate. Neither has Hillary Clinton, but she's seen a bunch of them up close. And what happened yesterday was really remarkable. A guy who defends himself by attacking his opponent spent answer after answer meandering defensively. And that is the key. I don't think in the second debate that we're going to see in a couple of weeks in St. Louis that he's going to do that again. But in this first take, and this is very likely to be the most watched debate of the three, provided he shows up for all three,
yep.
She was really able to make him look weak.
Look weak, but Molly, I mean, we've been told, Jim Fallows has written, turn the sound off. We didn't do that. We wanted to hear what they were saying, but just watch it. And Donald Trump, and the other theme was of domination. He likes to dominate. He dominated a lot. I mean, he talked over Hillary Clinton a lot. He got right in there. His side of the split screen was a very active side between facial expression and in there with a lot to say. It might have been meandering sometimes, but did he not kind of dominate a bunch of the screen time?
I don't think so. I actually think he was interrupting because he felt that he wasn't getting his due. He was interrupting because he felt that she was walking all over him and he wanted to dominate and he wasn't allowed to. And unlike a lot of the Republican candidates in the primary debates who did get dominated by Trump, Hillary didn't allow that to happen. She didn't let him have the floor when he tried to interrupt her repeatedly. She pressed her points. She made a very cogent case on issues like the birtherism and the tax returns. I think we should watch the debates with the sound on, and I think we should talk about what the candidates actually did argue about. But I don't think it was as straightforward as just, you know, alpha male, you know, rampaging across the stage like a gorilla. I actually think for a change, Trump didn't get away with that.
What about the visuals of it, Sam? We all saw the presidential primary debates where Donald Trump really went to town. Last night there he was just one-on-one, first time, as Molly says. Sound off, and we'll get to sound on, but sound off, how did each of them do?
One looked like they hated it. The other seemed like they could do it literally all night. There was this
moment.
You mean
Hillary looked like she could go all night?
Oh, my gosh, she was having fun. There's that one moment where, you know, Trump's going on for like 5 minutes. He finally stops. She, like, says woo and does this shoulder shimmy. Mm-hmm. And it's like she was enjoying it. She was having a great time. And I think that showed in the way she talked and the way she held herself. And Trump seemed to be flustered. He kept drinking water. He kept sniffling. He was making a lot of facial expressions and some side eye and some stank eye. It just, like, one of them was having fun.
Is woo enough? Like, after he attacked her, I mean, here he was. They were talking about temperament. This was last night at the debate, and he asserted he had a much better temperament than Hillary Clinton. Here we go.
I think my strongest asset, maybe by far, is my temperament. I have a winning temperament. I know how to win. She does not have
Secretary
how to win.
Clinton.
Wait, the AFL-CIO the other day, behind the blue screen, I don't know who you were talking to, Secretary Clinton, but you were totally out of control. I said, there's a person with a temperament that's got a problem.
Secretary Clinton.
Woo, okay.
Woo, okay. Glenn, is that enough? Is that enough to win after he comes at her?
You know, my greatest asset is my hairline. No, I mean, what? you can assert what you want, but you talked about the split screen, the visuals and the sound effects, because some of the things that he said weren't words, they were sound effects, really told a different story. Let me harken back to something Hillary Clinton told me when I did a podcast with her in April, Tom. We were talking about the famous Rick Lazio debate in 2000. I asked her about that.
When he came right up to her, sort of physically almost menacing her.
Right. She didn't say a word. She flinched a little bit, which you're not supposed to do on a debate stage, but it was a decisive moment in that campaign. It was a different time, a different era.
Yep.
But what she said to me about that, I said, what were you thinking at that moment? And she said, I was thinking, this guy is making a big mistake and I don't want to stop him from doing that. And that, I think, is one of the primary rules of debating, and Clinton has learned it well through her 30-some-odd debates, and that is Trump was making a lot of mistakes. He was talking a lot more than she was, but she knew when to shut up, and he didn't.
Molly, Donald Trump has made a lot of hay talking a lot in this campaign season. It must have pleased a bunch of people last night who support him, who are his bedrock. Are you so sure that he can't pull a few more over with that approach, that bluster and be right in her face approach?
Well, I think what we've seen is that Donald Trump already has the people who support Donald Trump. What he needed to do in this debate is win over other people who have not yet been convinced to support him. The blustery approach, I don't think, is what those people are looking for. They're looking for him to pass that bar of presidential timber. And when his answer to a question about temperament is to sort of fly off the handle and rant, that becomes a difficult sell.
30 years and she hasn't fixed everything, anything, he might say last night. Hillary Clinton saying, does he have the temperament? And suggesting, saying, no, he does not. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about the first debate last night between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, what we saw, what we heard, what it means, and whether you're swayed one way or another by the candidates first one-on-one. Sam Sanders is with us from NPR, co-host of NPR's Politics Podcast. Glenn Thrush is here, chief political correspondent at Politico. Molly Ball is here from The Atlantic, and you can join us as well. What did you see in the meeting of Clinton and Trump last night? Any surprises, revelations, disappointments, new impressions? Was your mind changed, swayed, confirmed? And if you were undecided before, if that's you, what are you thinking after? Maybe Trump's strongest point, Hillary's been in there a long time, and we've still got problems. Here he was last night.
For 30 years, you've been doing it, and now you're just starting to think of solutions.
Well, actually,
I will bring back jobs. You can't bring back jobs.
Well, actually, I have thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah, for 30 years.
And Hillary, she took Make America Great Again and said this would just be more trickle-down, trumped up trickle-down.
The kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. In fact, it would be the most extreme version, the biggest tax cuts for the top percent of the people in this country than we've ever had. I call it trumped-up trickle-down, because that's exactly what it would be. That is not how we grow the economy.
Molly Ball, you said Donald Trump came out, Donald, as she called him last night. He started out with Secretary, went to Hillary, back and forth. You said he came out with a couple of good points. What would you point to as his strongest points and performance of the night?
I think that was one of them. I think the attack on her for being a career politician, for being part of the status quo, for being part of a failed system, just for being implicated in 30 years of policy that haven't helped a lot of people, I think that was a very strong point. I think he got her on the trade issue as well, not necessarily because everybody agrees with his position against free trade, but because her her having changed position on the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a pretty naked flip-flop, a pretty naked case of political pandering, and he did nail her pretty effectively on that. So I thought those were his two strongest moments, and they both came early in the debate when people were probably watching most avidly and the most people were probably watching.
Sam Sanders, what about Lester Holt in the moderating chair? How do you think he did? I mean, he was in there. He was dignified. He structured things. He didn't jump in every time Donald Trump was jumping in on Hillary Clinton and say, you know, stand down, sir. Let them roam free quite a bit. I sort of lost track of the structure of the thing at a certain point. But how do you think he did?
I forgot he was there at some moments. Yeah. And, I mean, you can think
is that
was
a compliment
or
not?
I can't figure it out yet. I don't know how I feel about it. I think that there were some moments when he pushed back hard on some mistruths with birtherism, with stop and frisk. But there were other times where he seemed to have gone to get coffee. I do think where he was strongest was in the interlude about race. But overall, I found that conversation pretty disgusting. There was more talk of birtherism. At one point, Trump said that black and brown people are in hell. It was a low point. And so besides Lester Holt, and I just feel like there were moments in this debate that made me want to take a cold shower. It was just disgusting in some moments.
Disgusting? What do you mean exactly? Well, let's listen, and then you tell us. This is kind of a long clip, but this was that moment when Lester Holt went to the birther comments of Donald Trump that went on for a long time, as he'll point out here, and Donald Trump trying to explain it, going in different directions. In this case, Lester coming back pretty strong. Let's listen.
The birth certificate was produced in 2011. You continued to tell the story and question the president's legitimacy in 2012, 13, 14, 15, as recently as January. So the question is, what changed your
mind?
Well,
nobody was pressing it. Nobody was caring much about it. I figured you'd ask the question tonight, of course, but nobody was caring much about it. But I was the one that got him to produce the birth certificate, and I think I did a good job. Secretary Clinton also fought it. I mean, you know, now everybody in mainstream is going to say, oh, that's not true. Look, it's true. Sidney Blumenthal sent a reporter. You just have to take a look at CNN the last week, the interview with your former campaign manager, and she was involved. But just like she can't bring back jobs, she can't produce.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to follow up, and I will let you respond to that, because if there's a lot there, but we're talking about racial healing in this segment. What do you say to Americans?
Well, it was very, I say nothing. I say nothing because I was able to get him to produce it. He should have produced it a long time before. I say nothing.
I say nothing, but a lot has been said. A lot was said right there. Sam Sanders, disgusting. What are you talking?
I just think that this entire election, we've been seeing our nation's politics have these discussions about race that are not helpful. You know, whether
you... In
what
way, Sam? What do you mean?
This was a time when we could have talked about how to actually fix some racial problems here in the country, how to talk about police violence, how to talk about finding some kind of way to all come together. And instead, we're talking about birtherism again. Instead, we're talking about super predators again. Instead, we're saying that folks are in hell. Like, I just... All around, I think that I would have much rather have seen a more substantive conversation about race. And for months now, I've been making this complaint.
Hillary Clinton calling Donald Trump out last night for a racist lie on the birtherism front. Molly Ball, fair?
Well, I think it is fair. I mean, it's not true. And there's obvious racial undertones to it. And you notice that he did not deny it last night again. He has performed one sort of one-line pro forma denial that he believes that the president is born in the United States. He didn't say that last night. And he continued to make this absurd case that birtherism is a terrible wrong that Hillary Clinton committed. But when he pursued it, he was doing something right. And denying the true fact that he did not put it to rest once he procured the birth certificate from President Obama. You know, to Sam's point, you go to November with the candidates you have, not the candidates you might want. And this is the level of the racial debate that we are having in this country, thanks largely to Donald Trump and the forces that have powered his campaign. And I thought that this was a low point for him in this debate. And, you know, for in just crass electoral terms, you know, one of the things that Hillary's had a hard time with is mobilizing the coalition that helped elect Barack Obama. It's hard for her to get particularly minority voters, as excited about her candidacy as they were about his. And so I think this moment where she really strongly defended the president against these kinds of attacks could have a galvanizing effect.
Trump blaming her 2008 campaign for first making that claim. The Wall Street Journal just saying flatly this morning, there is no evidence that is true. Molly Ball, Glenn Thrush, Sam Sanders, stand by. Lots of callers for the three of you on the first debate last night. Wes in Nashville, Tennessee. Wes, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love how your show handles hot issues with grace and intelligence. One point about your shock regarding the large number of undecided voters. Mm-hmm. I don't think voters are undecided about Clinton or Trump, but rather between Clinton, Trump, and a third party. But the reason I wanted to call was I usually cringe through presidential debates. They're often filled with dumbed-down, you know, pandering statements. But last night, Clinton gave the most concise, substantive answers I've ever heard in a debate. Her one-line soundbites weren't forced or rehearsed because they're actually, you know, off-the-cuff responses to Trump. So her ability to think on her feet really astounded me. All Trump did was talk about himself. But
Wes, to many of her responses, to many of her statements last night, Donald Trump's response was, that's just more political talk. We've heard that kind of thing. We've heard it for a long time. Just more of the same old political talk, Hillary. Did you feel that way?
I didn't, because I felt her responses didn't, like I said, weren't dumbed down to the lowest common denominator and weren't really, rehearsed to try to, appeal to the, to the least common denominator. I mean, I think they really, to me, they resonated with me with a grace and depth of knowledge that I have never seen in the debate before. I think she knocked it out of the park for me. It's signed, sealed, and delivered. She's got my support.
Wes, I appreciate your call. Glenn Thrush, that good? Did she connect? And did she connect widely enough to bring in, let's say, those young Sanders supporters who so far have not surged into her camp, to bring in minority voters who may be on the fence, and for that matter, to bring in white, you know, more that white middle class that's been ambivalent about Donald Trump? Really?
Well, let's talk, Tom, about that last cohort, because I think they are probably, in terms of the battleground states, the critical group. When Donald Trump is talking about race, when he is making these statements, and I thought one of the more outrageous, I thought his answer was a garbage answer. I agree with all of my fellow guests here. Mm-hmm. But I think when he is talking about race and saying, for the last couple of months, I've cleaned things up, which he said last night.
Yeah.
What he's really doing is he's talking to white, higher-educated voters. He's not talking to black voters. Only 2 or 3% of them are going to go for him in the mm-hmm. general election. Mm-hmm. But what he is giving them, white-educated voters who are flocking away from him, particularly women, is saying, I'm good enough for you to vote for. He failed to reach that benchmark last night. And I think, as your caller points out, the pitch that Clinton is making – there's a lot of background noise that we don't tend to pay attention to in these debates. But Clinton talked an awful lot about climate change. She talked in passing about social issues like gay and lesbian marriage. These are issues that resonate with that cohort of voters. So while we may have been focused on the flashpoints of the debate, a lot of the voters that she was targeting were hearing some of those quieter points.
I think, Molly, if I can jump in there for a second. Yeah, I to the caller's point about whether her answers were rehearsed and were, you know, politician speak, I think they absolutely were. And one of the interesting things about this debate was in a way how predictable it was. Neither candidate played against type at all. And rather than try to convince the world that she is some charismatic, spontaneous figure, we saw Hillary try to turn her preparation, her hardworking nature into a virtue, saying, I prepared to be president. I'm someone who does my homework. I know all of the answers to all of the questions. And Trump doing exactly what she expected him to do, which was take the bait at every opportunity.
Here he was at one point last night saying he's been all over the place. She's been, I don't know if he was alluding to prepping or home with pneumonia, and Hillary Clinton coming back saying she's prepared.
You look at the inner cities, and I just left Detroit, and I just left Philadelphia, and I just, you know, you've seen me. I've been all over the place. You decided to stay home, and that's okay. But I will tell you, I've been all over, and I've met some of the greatest people I'll ever meet within these communities, and they are very, very upset with what their politicians have told them and what their politicians have done.
I think Donald just criticized me for preparing for this debate. And yes, I did. And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And I think that's a good thing.
Sam Sanders, is that what he was going at? Or was he saying, you had pneumonia, you're weak, you don't have stamina?
Even before we get to that, I was in Detroit when Trump was there.
Yeah.
Trump was there for about 5 hours. He didn't even stay for the whole church service. He drove through some neighborhoods.
He said he met some of the greatest people he'll ever meet.
There's a way to do black outreach properly and thoroughly. Detroit was not it.
Yeah.
The last thing he did the other week in some church was not it. And even if we can say that he's doing this actually for white voters, I don't even think it's graceful enough, you know, for some of them. So that, for one, I have to say, I was there. It wasn't all that it could be. And I do think, as Molly said, you know, as far as poise and presentation, you know, hearing Clinton say what she said, that she prepared, it felt like she studied up. She had her index cards. She was briefed. And after this debate with Trump, I was trying to figure out in my mind how he studied and what that looked like. And I couldn't figure it out.
Maybe he wanted to be just as he was, kind of extemporaneous, using a lot of the lines from the campaign trail. Teresa in Timonium, Maryland. Teresa, thank you very much for calling. What did you see?
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to call in and say that my family and I, we got on the debate last night to watch it because we haven't decided whether or not we want to place our vote with Trump or with the independent, Gary.
Gary Johnson,
and,
okay.
Say that again?
Gary Johnson. Okay, we got it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, thank you. And in watching the debate, it was funny. She had some funny things in there. But she looked way too polished. She didn't look real and sincere. She looked like she was planning things, and it just looked uncomfortable with her. It just confirmed the fact that we definitely don't want her.
Too polished. She says that's preparation, that she's prepared. What's the difference between being prepared and being too polished for you, Teresa?
Well, let me say it this way. When we sat down and talked after the debate, my 16-year-old said, you know, Mom, it looks to me like Trump really cares. And all she's caring about is what's best for her gain. But Trump seemed to really care. Now, did it help us whether or not who we're going to vote for? I'm waiting for the next debate to see if that helps. And we're hoping that Gary will be in on it this time. But
Teresa, I think we've got it. And let me take it right there. And I really appreciate your call. Hey, Glenn, Molly, Sam, I put it to you. Is it possible that, you know, all three of you are missing something that a whole lot of Americans out there are seeing? And you know, here's Teresa's son says Trump really cares for the country.
Well, I think there are certainly people who are gonna feel that. That was a really interesting perspective. I was glad to hear it. I actually ran into Gary Johnson on the street this morning in Midtown Manhattan.
Okay.
And
hi, Gary.
And asked him what he thought, and he said sarcastically, "Oh, we're saved. Weren't they terrific?" And his view was that both candidates were equally terrible, and that is why he is needed as an alternative.
Yeah.
Although his running mate, interestingly, does not feel that way. His running mate felt that Bill Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, I spoke to him as well, and he believes that Clinton did substantially better than Trump in the debate. You know, I do think that it is a problem for Hillary, this lack of trust that people have, this sense that she is – what the caller was saying is that she's sort of a phony and that her political prospects are her primary interest. That's a hard thing to dispel on a debate stage. It may be impossible. I think she did as well as she could have, but I don't think she's ever going to convince America that she's, you know, as trustworthy as the day is long. I don't know if there's any way for her to repair that entirely.
Glenn, the latest summary of polls finds her up only 1.5% over Mr. Trump nationally. Is it possible that there is this kind of, you know, barely submerged majority out there for him that the political class, the pundit class, all of us, you guys are missing?
Look, he's confounded a lot of people, and the opinion of your caller I've heard expressed time and time again. People just don't like Hillary Clinton, whether it's because she's been on the scene as long as she has, made as many enemies. She is stiff at times. In fact, I ran into one of her senior advisors in the spin room afterwards, and I said, give me one criticism. And they said she really didn't go out of her way to connect with the American people. She was engaged in defeating Donald Trump. This is a big problem for her, maybe the biggest problem for her.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking about the first debate last night between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump with Sam Sanders of NPR's Politics Podcast and more, Glenn Thrush, chief political correspondent for Politico, Molly Ball, politics writer at The Atlantic. You can join us. What did you think? If you were advising Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton for round two, what would your advice be today? Was Trump too aggressive or just right? Was Hillary too dismissive of him or just right? And what do you still need to know? Comments online all over the place, on Twitter and beyond. Hello Kitty says his temperament is that of a two-year-old. He can't keep his cool. He wasn't prepared. It's clear he doesn't know a damn thing about what it means to lead a country. On the other hand, Fun Girl says Trump did fine. We can see why an unqualified, inexperienced junior senator from Illinois had no trouble taking Hillary down in 2008. She's awful at these debates, and now she looks 8 years more bedraggled. Okay, okay, that's rough. Mark in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Mark, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I called in because I was quite disappointed in the moderator that he did not ask a question about the email, the Clinton Foundation, Benghazi. Those are the things that are right in the front center of the news, not the birther issue. Why would he not ask those questions? That was important to so many Americans to hear what her true response would be to that and not to address that. And not to critique the commentator for not asking that question,
yeah.
I think it's just deplorable.
Mark, stick with us. Glenn Thrush, he was there on birtherism, but the caller says, you know, Trump was there on the emails, but where was the moderator on Clinton Foundation, Benghazi, the emails for that matter?
I will note the use of the word deplorable, by the way. But that's a good point. He did talk a little bit about emails. Remember, he offered this kind of poison exchange that he will give up his tax returns, which she scored tremendous points against him on, if she will turn over the 30,000 redacted emails. But yeah, Lester Holt did not follow up much on the emails. And there was no – to my astonishment – and by the way, to the astonishment of the Clinton folks who had prepared assiduously for an attack on the Clinton Foundation, Trump didn't mention it. I don't think he mentioned it once. Maybe my guests can contradict me on that. I think part of that was he was so rattled and so focused on defending himself that he forgot to do it. And then the other thing about it is there's been this series of devastating exposés by David Fahrenthold of the Washington Post showing that he has essentially – used his own foundation as a bit of a piggy bank, including spending $258,000 of charitable contributions to pay off legal bills associated with his businesses.
I mean, Mark, in Wisconsin, maybe Donald Trump himself should have come back on the emails. He brought it up and then he just dropped it, Mark.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that felt he should have brought it back up, but it should have been asked right from the get-go. And I'm a little disappointed in your person's comments. I mean, let's just be fair and balanced about it. It was a misstep by the moderator. It showed his bias. It's obvious to most people what happened there.
I think Glenn Thrush is saying he would have welcomed questions on those fronts, but you're right, and he acknowledges those were not pressed on. Now, we've got two more debates coming, and it's interesting what's going to be there that we haven't heard so far. The taxes issue was interesting. Hillary Clinton just went to town on that last night. She clearly prepped on this one. In the absence of those being out there, she went after, well, what might be in Donald Trump's tax returns.
So you've got to ask yourself, why won't he release his tax returns? And I think there may be a couple of reasons. First, maybe he's not as rich as he says he is. Second, maybe he's not as charitable as he claims to be. Third, we don't know all of his business dealings, but we have been told through investigative reporting that he owes about $650 million to Wall Street and foreign banks. Or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid...
That makes me smart, says Donald Trump. It's Hillary Clinton kind of just spinning out a great big story that nobody knows what's in there, though, because he has not released them. Let's go to New York. Diane in Corning, New York. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. That comment was actually one of the biggest
you know, things that really rattled me last night listening to the debates. That makes me smart. That might make you smart as a businessman, but the president, politicians, teachers, firefighters, we're not skipping out on our taxes. We're here to serve, and service is doing more than just for yourself. In addition, the other sort of offhand comment that he threw out when Secretary Clinton said something about the housing crisis, and she said, you know, it's documented that you were kind of thrilled about it, and he said, hey, that's good for business. I don't think that what the country needs is a businessman. We need somebody who's willing to serve, you know, not serve their own interests.
Well, I mean, I take your point, Diane. I appreciate your call. I mean, there's a big, some kind of divide right there. And I don't know how this breaks down. Ultimately, Sam Sanders, we've got a lot of response on that. Jill writes to us. She says, in response to his assertion that it was made him smart not to pay those federal income taxes. And that much, as Hillary pointed out, we do know. She writes, how is that not a campaign-ending gaffe? What would our country, our military, our education system, or transportation, veterans look like if we all avoided paying federal income tax? On the other hand, Sam, you had Donald Trump saying again and again up there last night, look, she's had 30 years. She hasn't been able to get it done. I can get it done. I can bring this business experience to bear.
I mean, I think that in spite of Trump's comments about taxes being kind of extreme, he does speak to a sentiment that lots of Americans hold. Americans want to pay low taxes. They try to pay low taxes when they file. I mean, it's not as if his emotion behind those comments is not one felt by lots of Americans, right? I mean, he might have said it at the extreme, but lots of folks want to pay lower taxes. That's the reality. I also think that in spite of, you know, Trump's problem with these comments and those comments, some callers were right in that Clinton didn't really have to face some tough questions on Benghazi or more pushback on her stance with TPP or how she has yet to answer major email questions with a good answer. So I expect the next two debates to kind of go harder on her.
We'll see how that sizes up. Braden in Nashville, thank you for calling, Braden. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. First off, great guests. I'm a big fan of all three, podcast listener and all.
Great.
But I went into last night's debate, a Bernie supporter. I have the bumper sticker and everything. Miss him. But I didn't like either one. But there was a moment last night when Hillary was speaking, and she seemed to open up the audience to the entire world, the international audience, just speaking about trade affairs and sort of alluding to Trump's wishy-washy nature on what he will do with other countries and what he won't and our relations with them. And she said, she finished it with, our word is good. And that moment gave me chills, and that convinced me. And I've ordered my Hillary bumper sticker. And
going to be right next to your Bernie sticker. Braden, we got it. That was a moment, Molly, where she got very sober and she looked past Donald Trump and even past the national audience to the world as if, here I am, the reassuring, the sober presence who's going to tell the world that the world's all right. But what about the argument Donald Trump had made just before that? We are trillions in debt and we can't keep up this role.
Yeah, you know, this campaign is so much a contest of competing visions, not just for what the country ought to be, but for what it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a mess? Do you think that we're going to peck in a handbasket? Do you think that people's lives are miserable and we've got to uproot the whole system?
But wasn't it fair to some extent, Molly, when Donald Trump was saying, look at a lot of our airports compared to what you can find abroad now? He said they look like third world. There is some truth in that when you travel these days and come back to the States. We've got some down at the heel infrastructure, and Hillary didn't really respond to that.
That's true. I was interested. I think the Clinton campaign has got to be cheering hearing this particular caller say that they were won over, because what he was talking about, I think, is less about that and more about this sense of patriotism that was such a hallmark of the Democratic Convention, the waving of the Constitution and the generals and the lauding of the military and saying that America's word is good in the world. That wasn't actually a major theme for Hillary last night, but I think it's an important theme for her candidacy. And I think, you know, the other major theme that I think she hoped to speak to some of those Bernie supporters with last night was, if you listen to her economic message, it was very populist. It was about bringing down the rich and taking the 1% down a peg, because those at the top are doing too well at the expense of those at the bottom. So, you know, I think you could really see her making a pitch on economic grounds for some of those voters as well.
She said, I don't think top-down works in America. But, of course, Glenn, Donald Trump came back saying, typical politician, all talk, no action, sounds good, doesn't work, never going to happen. Our country is suffering because people like Secretary Clinton made such bad decisions. Who sways there, Glenn? Because people want more growth. They know we have not had high growth. You know, we've seen these numbers on poverty improved and so on. But still, Trump is correct that it has been a low growth recovery from the recession.
Immensely powerful message and the core of his entire campaign. You know, it's so funny. We talk about Donald Trump as being this big personality. But really, the truth of the matter is when he says it's a movement, he's not far wrong. People are really angry, and particularly white working class folks who feel that the country has left them behind. And I just want to talk about a point that was mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. When Trump talks about not paying taxes, obviously that appeals to a segment of his base. But we got to remember, Barack Obama won convincingly in 2012 on a central pledge to raise taxes on the wealthy. The political culture has really flipped since the Reagan era. We now have a substantial majority of Americans, a lot of people in Trump's camp who want to see the rich and Wall Streeters soaked, who support higher taxes. So it's a much more nuanced issue than that used to be.
Let's go to Austin, Texas, and Christian. Christian, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a researcher. I work within black and brown communities, especially with youth. And, I just want to agree with Sam's point that the discourse on race yesterday was disgusting. And a lot of people that I work with, to put it in research terms, I guess, feel like both the points on race from both candidates stem from a point of white supremacy. And Trump overtly and Clinton, more implicitly, they're both, they obfuscate the conversation and don't talk directly and empathetically about race. And Trump at one point had the gall to say that when he didn't give housing to black residents, he came away with it, scot-free. And he seemed proud of that. And the hate speech that comes out of his campaign has become normalized within, media discourse, within his campaign discourse, and honestly, to see it in on live television in front of 100 million people again and again, I mean, it's disgusting.
Christian, are you lumping Hillary Clinton in with that? Is that what I heard you say or not?
No, I'm not lumping Hillary Clinton in with Trump's hate discourse, but what I am saying is I feel like the Clinton campaign has to navigate around this idea appealing to many sides, and they mm-hmm. don't directly and specifically talk about this issue enough that I feel that a lot of the folks I work with feel that's empathetic and honest to different communities of color.
Christian, I appreciate your call. Sam Sanders, she said racist lie last night. I've never heard a phrase like that before in a presidential debate.
Yeah, I mean, I get the point, though. I think that a lot of the things that Clinton says about race and a lot of the things that her supporters say are kind of finger-pointy. And you can say that they're wrong or right to point the fingers, but that is not making a conversation that moves us all forward on race. Should Clinton win the election, she has to govern those deplorables, too. She has to be their president, too. And they have to be part of solutions on race. And of course, Trump has said some things that are very offensive, but Clinton could do a better job of making all Americans feel that they can begin to at least have this conversation.
Can she do that and win, Molly?
Well, it's interesting. I think we've seen Hillary Clinton embrace a lot of the new progressive discourse around race, talking mm-hmm. about institutional racism. We heard her talk about implicit bias last night.
Yes, we did.
Which I think is frankly dangerous territory when you're speaking to the white majority of voters in this country who may find that kind of language alienating. And as Sam was saying, the language about deplorables and so it's a very fine line to walk. But she has been probably more progressive on race than most recent Democratic candidates, certainly than her husband, who was running in a different racial atmosphere. But let's not forget whose sort of signature moment of his candidacy was calling Sister Soldier a racist, calling a black woman a racist.
Yes, indeed.
So the discourse on race is in a really tortured place in this country. Obviously, Donald Trump has brought it to a new extreme. But that's where we are.
Glenn Thrush, look forward. We've got the VP debate is next Tuesday at Longwood University in Virginia. We've got the second presidential debate, town hall style, different style, October 9th at Washington University in St. Louis. What's the challenge for each of these going forward? What do you expect next, Glenn?
Well, I will say that there are probably plenty of good seats available for the vice presidential debate.
Okay.
Like, I've never seen – it's funny. Last time was super consequential because Obama had laid an egg in Denver and Biden really came and delivered
him out.
A powerful performance. Right. So I don't think the VEEP debate is going to be that big a deal. The next debate is interesting for two things. It's a town hall format. Clinton's people think that she'll be able to express, she'll be able to use that as an opportunity to connect with the American people.
That means half the questions will come from the audience somehow.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And you're able to interact, and she's able to talk back to them and ask questions. They like having her in an environment where she's asking as opposed to answering questions. But I think for Trump, if there's one thing we learned about Donald Trump is he is a fast learner. And I will tell you, he is going to be studying these. I know he doesn't like preparation, but he's going to be looking at this tape. And I think he knows very well what he did wrong last night. And I expect him to be a very different debater next time.
He was struggling at the end, Glenn, saying there were terrible things I wanted to say that I just couldn't bring myself to say, kind of suggesting about the Clintons or the family or infidelity. I don't know what. Do you think that gets packed away or that comes out next time?
I think it would be a tremendously self-destructive move on his part, but, you know, you never can tell what he's going to do.
Boy, it was right there, Sam Sanders. I mean, you could feel that he wanted to go there, just wanted to go there, Sam.
Yeah. I mean, my only hope for the next debate is that it's a little classier. There were several moments last night where I just cringed and I felt dirty. I want the conversation to be more civil on both sides next time.
Molly Ball, a hope of that? I mean, this is kind of where our politics are right now.
Yeah, if last night represented restrained Donald Trump, oh boy, we're in for something.
There's an oh boy. Two more to go, plus the VP debate. Molly Ball at The Atlantic, absolutely great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Glenn Thrush, chief political correspondent at Politico, always terrific. Glenn, thank you for joining us today.
Great to be here.
And my NPR colleague, Sam Sanders, with the NPR Politics Podcast. Thank you very much for being here, Sam.
Thank you. It was fun.
Late Nights for All. Here we go. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.